morning is United States against Williams. Mr. Stwan.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Mark Stewart, appointed counsel for Mr. Williams in this direct appeal from a criminal conviction. The facts may be briefly summarized. Mr. Williams is convicted of two counts of being a felon in possession of two firearms, one a pistol and one a rifle, acquired in April of 2002 and was sentenced. We acknowledge this morning, as we did in our brief, that the principal argument we'd like the court to consider, and that is that the indictment was multiplicitous and that there was error in it going forward, was not raised prior to trial by defense counsel.
What turns on the answer to this? Is it anything more than the $100 special assessment?
Possibility of the court considering a different sentence, yes.
No, if you look at the application of the guidelines, does anything turn on this? The sentences were fully concurrent, except for the special assessment. If you did a guideline calculation, would anything turn on the outcome? Did this add a group under the guidelines, for example?
Your Honor, I will acknowledge that I am not intimately familiar with the nuances of the application of the guidelines.
This is not a question of nuance. This is a question whether the extra convictions added a group under the guidelines. And the answer is either yes or no.
To my knowledge, it did not.
All right. So it had no effect under the guidelines. So why would it, the only thing that turns on the outcome is the $100 special assessment. Now, plain error, the Supreme Court tells us, is something that, you know, creates a sense that a grave injustice has been done. Is the $100 special assessment a grave injustice?
If the court takes perspective that the measuring stick is the $100 special assessment,
well,
then I would...
That's all I can figure out turns on this, unless you can give me a reason why more turns on it.
I would submit, Your Honor, that the integrity and...
You know, the Supreme Court said in Olano that you have to point to adverse concrete circumstances that amount to an injustice. That's essential to show plain error. And if you can't point to anything more than the special assessment, it's awfully hard to see it.
Well,
if there is something more, then we need to know it.
Your Honor, I would start with this, or begin with this proposition, and that is, one, it should not have gone to the jury in the manner at which it went. There's an argument to be made, granted I may not be able to convince this panel, but an argument to be made that the defendant should not have been, his guilt or innocence should not have been determined in the context in which the jury decided it, as opposed to, for example, a single count or some other remedy at the time.
You mean it shouldn't have gone to the jury with the evidence that one guy stuck the shotgun out the window and pointed at the car, and the defendant got out with his hand behind his back, apparently with the gun in it. But that isn't something that the jury should be able to take into consideration, those two things?
Well, ideally, the issue would have been raised prior to trial. The district court...
What Judge Mannion mentioned would have gone to the jury in any event, right? What we're talking about is whether it's two counts, one gun per count, or one count covering two guns. The information about the two guns is presented to the jury one way or the other, right?
That is correct, yes, Your Honor.
Exactly.
If I misapprehended your
question. Nothing whatsoever turns on this, except $100.
Your Honor.
Has your client paid the $100, by the way?
I apologize, Your Honor.
Has your client paid the special assessment?
Your Honor, I acknowledge I did not.
So maybe even $100 doesn't turn on this.
The sentence turns on this, and whether he's paid the $100 or not, the fact remains that that's part of the judgment in the case, and it should be corrected. We should be interested to some extent, if not to a great extent, that the system works as it's intended to work. In this instance, defense counsel did not challenge the matter before trial. It was not challenged during trial or at the conclusion of evidence. The defendant stands convicted of two counts.
And one can say in support of defense counsel that that's partly because everybody on the planet understood that this is completely inconsequential.
That may be, Your Honor, but we don't know that, and we'd be speculating.
Well, your request was for us to vacate the whole thing and send it back for resentencing, was it not?
That is one option, yes, Your Honor. The other option would be to reverse and direct that there, he be submitted to a new trial.
I mean, I'm looking at your conclusion, your prayer and your conclusion to send
yes.
back.
Yes.
Would you, are you anticipating that if we did what you asked, send the whole, reverse and remand the whole thing for resentencing, that a different sentence would occur?
It may, yes, Your Honor.
Well, how? That's the guidelines call for a different sentence?
That was your response to what Judge Easterbrook was asking.
That was my inquiry. If the guidelines would treat the two differently, then we've actually got something. If the guidelines treat it the same, then we don't. And
Your Honor, what I must acknowledge that I cannot articulate would request the opportunity if the court so desires to more fully develop, and that is the possibility where within the range this sentence may fall. It may affect what a district court judge does or doesn't do. I acknowledge...
Where within the range did this sentence fall?
And Your Honor, that's where I apologize. I'm at a loss to articulate that this morning. And I apologize and would be happy to submit supplemental...
I think we can find that out for ourselves. This is something that should have been in your brief.
I apologize.
We have several options. I mean, one is we can send the whole thing back for sentencing, or we can say it's... de minimis with regard to the $100, or we could vacate one of the sentences, which would leave it just as it is.
Well, we could say it legitimately has two counts.
Yes, yes. The court could conclude that it was not multiplicitous. That is true. And Your Honor is correct that the court does have a number of options. Our request of relief is that it be remanded for resentencing. We submit, Your Honor, that the focus in terms of the question of whether or not the indictment was multiplicitous should turn on and should focus on the defendant's possession and what he did or did not do with the firearms, and not the fortunate or unfortunate actions, depending on one's perspective, of what some third party or some other person did in regard to the weapons. We submit that based on the acknowledgement or concessions by the government that these firearms were acquired at the same time and in the same place, but perhaps during some part of time on April 23rd, where one of the weapons was in the hands of a third party, does not answer or address the concerns of multiplicity. I would have no further argument to submit on the other points raised in the brief at this time, and would thank the court and remind the court that our request is that the court determine that there was error in this case in the form of a multiplicitous indictment, and that the matter, at a minimum, should be reversed and remanded for resentencing.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Ms. King.
May it please the court, Lolita Morris King, Assistant United States Attorney, on behalf of the United States, appellee in this case.
Where did the sentence fall?
Your Honor, I don't have the exact calculations before me, but if my recollection is correct, I believe it fell somewhere in the middle of the guideline range. And to further address some of the points brought out by the court with opposing counsel, this issue from the government's position would turn on the special assessment of $100. My recollection is that there was no grouping involved in this case, and that the $100 special assessment does not rise to a level of a grave injustice. The guidelines did not treat the two firearms any differently. I believe that the calculations under the guidelines fell under 2K1.1. And again, I believe, if my recollection is correct, it did fall somewhere in the middle. Counsel is correct. The government did in its brief acknowledge that the pistol and rifle were acquired at the same time and from the same place on Scotch Street. However, it is the government's position that Williams' possession of the pistol and the rifle on the same date was differentiated. The evidence in the record is that Williams only had constructive possession of the rifle. Now, albeit it was through third persons riding in the same vehicle with Mr. Williams, that third party stored, maintained, and physically possessed the rifle that was eventually pointed out the window at the Dean family in a threatening manner. The evidence in this case also revealed that the pistol was actually physically...
Would you answer this question? There was a call to the house and the guns were brought out. Is that what it was? Call made and...
Mr. Williams contacted the resident on Scott Street. About 10 minutes later, he arrived. When he arrived, those guns were out in view for him to see. The individuals, Mr. Williams, Mr. Goodpasture, and Mr. Clary, then proceeded from the house to Mr. Williams' vehicle.
But the question was, my only reason for asking, the question was, who ownership of the guns, or at least who had control of those guns initially, was
Mr. Clary.
Clay.
Mr. Clary, yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
And so from the Scott Street residence, Mr. Goodpasture carries out the rifle. Mr. Clary has the pistol. Once they enter into Mr. Williams' vehicle, there's a switch made. Mr. Goodpasture gives the rifle to Mr. Clary. Mr. Clary gives the pistol to Mr. Williams.
Is this all in anticipation of hunting down or looking for this adversary?
Yes, the individual that was referred to as Buck.
Yeah.
At the trial.
So that exchange was made before they found who they thought was Buck.
Correct. And there was a conversation by Mr. Williams on his cell phone, as Mr. Goodpasture testified to, alluding to the fact that I'm going to shoot you. Mm-hmm. And he believed that the other person on the end was Buck, the individual that they were looking for. And I might add that before they left the house, Mr. Williams asked Mr. Clary, or made a statement to Mr. Clary, after they had the gun, are you ready to do this? And they proceeded outside the house to Mr. Williams' car with the weapons in tow. And so the record does clearly reflect that Mr. Williams was in actual physical possession of the pistol. There was no plain error in this case. There was the differentiation of the possession of the firearms, even though they were acquired at the same time and from the same place.
Well, does it diverge into two counts, at least from your point of view, when Clary takes the rifle and Williams takes the pistol, and then Clary, I guess this is where you say there's a constructive possession, as sort of an agent of Williams, points the rifle out the window at this suspect car.
Yes, Your Honor.
He's doing one operation, Williams is doing another.
Yes, Your Honor, correct. And if I might add, I believe the record reflects that Mr. Williams actually took a few steps. Let me back up. They were about a car length away from the Dean's vehicle, a car length away, and Mr. Williams actually approached the Dean's vehicle, Mr. Darren Dean and his family. And Mr. Clary was still at the vehicle with the rifle pointing outside the Cadillac vehicle that they were riding in.
Is that how it gets into two counts, in your view, that Clary's got one part of the operation using one gun, maybe let's say to restrain, and the other is not sure what he was walking for or what the gun behind his back for. You can only speculate, but then when he recognized that it was the wrong person, then he stopped. But let's assume he's going to shoot him. Then there's two separate parts of the operation. I think that, is that a position the government is taking?
That is kind of how I would submit it to the court, Your Honor, that Clary's constructive or actual possession of the rifle was Mr. Williams' constructive possession of that rifle, albeit though it was the same transaction.
Well, I know, but he's doing two things at once, I guess. maybe I'm trying to make your case. I'm not sure. I'm just trying to figure out, and I'm not sure it matters much at this point, but it seems to me that there's two operations going on, one to halt the car and restrain it, and the other to move in for the whatever.
And that is the possibility, Your Honor. The jury certainly could have interpreted that way. Certainly can't.
Well, did the government ask them to? I don't know. Did you make that case?
Your Honor, I don't know if necessarily the government made that case. The case presented at trial was that Mr. Cleary is standing there at the vehicle, pointing that rifle outside of that Cadillac at the dean, while Mr. Williams is up close and personal with Mr. Dean, accosting them, the whole family. So we don't believe that there has been any multiplicitous counts involved with this case. Even if the court were to determine that the defendant was convicted of multiplicitous counts, which we don't believe that, but if the court was to determine that, the government would be in agreement with Williams that he should be remanded for resentencing. But again, we believe the evidence clearly shows that he was not convicted of multiplicitous counts. The appellant didn't address any other issues today, aside from the multiplicitous issue, which he acknowledged that he did waive. I would add that...
No, he didn't waive it. He forfeited it. Big difference. Not even the plain error standard is applicable if he waived it.
Well, Your Honor, he did not raise it below.
That's a forfeiture.
All right, Your Honor. With that in mind, Your Honor, we would ask that the court affirm the decision of the district court and uphold these convictions.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ms. King. Anything further, Mr. Storm?
In brief, come back to point we would ask the court to consider, and that is, should focus on the defendant's possession. Is the defendant is charged with possessing firearms after having been convicted with a felony, not the possession or activities taken by third parties. There was and is no evidence that the defendant stored either of these firearms differently from one from the other, or that he acquired them at different times or in different places. There's no evidence that the defendant directed either Mr. Cleary or Mr. Goodpaster to switch the firearms or to do anything with them in that regard. And as the court indicated, while it might have been submitted to the jury as two parts of an operation or two parts of the same activity, and while the government indicates it would submit that proposition, if you will, to the panel today, I submit that it was not presented to the jury in that fashion. And the fact that it was merely a possibility and that the jury could have interpreted the evidence in that fashion is at least in part why we would ask the court to determine that the indictment was multiplicitous, the count should be reversed and the defendant granted a new trial, and if not, that it be remanded for resentencing, acknowledging that I am unable to articulate a more definitive explanation as to what impact that may have. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. The case will be taken under advisement. Court will be in recess until tomorrow.